Welcome, everyone, to The Art of Advisory. My name is Hector Garcia, and I'm joined by my co-host, Kirk Bowman. Hey, Kirk, how are you doing this week?
I'm good, Hector. What's going on, my friend?
Everything's good. So let's talk about the topic for today. And we were, sometimes we'll prepare for these topics for weeks. Sometimes we'll sort of do them on the fly. I'm actually preparing for a free webinar I'm going to have this Thursday on the 26th in my QB Power Hour webinar series called sort of Introduction to Value Creation. And this is one of the sort of the new main topics I'm going to hit on. And that's going to be followed by a longer 3-hour webinar on sort of like the implementation of value pricing. That's going to be in August somewhere. We'll discuss the dates and stuff later on as we have that set. But the concept I wanted to discuss with you, Kirk, is the 5 opportunities to create value. And I don't know if we should limit them to 5, or it should be more, it should be less. But I think oftentimes we like to enumerate things and create lists. That way we have a finite number of topics that we cover, and we kind of want to stay within that framework. So these are the 5 opportunities to create value. And there are 2 that happen outside the engagement. Let's call it number 1 and number 5. And then 3 that happen during the engagement. So I'm gonna list all 5, and then we're going to deep dive into mostly the ones that happen outside the engagement, because we have spent a whole bunch of time already talking about the one during the engagement. So the first one is what I called the brand value, which is the opportunity to create value before you talk to your clients, before you engage. This is the perceived value of the customer before you have the first word, conversation, email exchange with your customer. And we're going to deep dive on that. The second one is what I call the understanding value, is, you know, how you understanding your client creates probably the biggest or the most amount of value out of the entire 5 stages of opportunities of value. This is the stuff that we have discussed in detail. We talked about the needs assessment meeting, and we talked about having the value conversation and offering options for pricing and the actual proposal process. We have talked about that quite a bit in the past 25 episodes or so. And then the third one is what I call the performance value, is, you know, the value that you generate and create while performing the work. And this is where most people, most service professionals think this is the only place to add value, and this is not. And this is low-hanging fruit. This is, you know, your actual work, the actual task, the actual craft, you know, your profession, your expertise. This is the performance value. This is what you do. Then the fourth one is after you complete the work, which I call the results value, which is when you actually present the work product, when you actually enumerate or quantify the actual economic and emotional value to the customer that is derived from the work performed. A lot of times we forget that it's not just the work that we perform, is what comes out of the work we perform. So that's what I call the results value. And those last 3 I mentioned, the understanding, performance, and results value, that's the internal value that happens during the engagement. And you can draw a direct connection to something we talked about, I think it's in the 2nd episode, which is the U curve, right? You know, where, you know, we have basically a U shape or a V shape that represents the value and the work that you're doing, whereas the two top of the U's, of the U, or the two top of the V's, is the assessment or the value conversation, and then at the end, the actual presentation of the results. And then everything in between is the performance, which is valuable, but it is not at the highest level of value per customer perception. And then the last one is the one that I like to call the warranty value, which is the value that derives way after the completion of the work, that represents the enduring value of your work product or your capacity to serve your client, you know, past the service or beyond the service. So I like to ask you, what do you think about those 5? Am I missing some? I'll cede the floor to you.
So I think what you just explained is a framework, right? And it might be 5 for you, it might be 6 for somebody else, it might be 7 for a third person. But the bottom line is, frameworks help us think through things. And so whenever you see, for example, a blog post, the 5 best ways to do this, the 7 things you don't want to miss, you know, the 12 mistakes you don't want to make, all those kind of things are simply frameworks. And so I think it's good that you put some thought into kind of what are the stages of an engagement with a customer, and then helping us realize we create value throughout the engagement with a customer. It's specifically the idea that we create value even as soon as the first phone call, and there's value that's created well after the engagement is complete. So I think that's a wonderful way to think of it. You talked about, you know, brand understanding, performance, results, and warranty. Probably the only comment I might make is, instead of warranty, you might consider another term, you know, guarantee. Might be another way to say that. But either way, I think it's a great framework that's going to serve well for the webinar you're talking about. And by the way, since you're talking about some things coming up, I want to mention that I'm going to be doing a webinar series later on this fall on helping create value-priced engagements for annual renewals. So this is something that I'll be presenting probably in September, October, so that you can take the knowledge and then apply it as you go into the last quarter of the year.
So my recommendation in general, especially when it comes to like value pricing education, is there are basically two arms when it comes to it. One is the value pricing business model and mindset that we easily connect the most with new customers. And then there is the value pricing model with existing customers, which is what you're talking about, the renewals. You know, and the reason why I think you use the word renewal is because we should not take any engagements or any customers for granted as permanent. Like, we should almost make sure that every single interaction we have with a customer is up for grabs and up for renegotiation. And I think that's the focus that you want to do is, you know, when it comes time to make the decision and transition them to value pricing, how do we renegotiate and put them into a new model, correct?
Yes. I mean, you know, the question that I get probably most often is, how do I switch existing customers from whatever business model, typically hourly, over to value? And a lot of times the best opportunity for that is at annual renewals. And so all of that kind of falls under the fifth category in your framework of kind of this warranty or guarantee stage of the engagement. And so I'm going to do something specifically on that. So in one way, you might just consider, you know, you're going to do 3 hours on the first five, you know, on all five. I'm going to do an entire series just on the last one.
Awesome. That's perfect. So let's deep dive and focus on the first one, which I called brand value, where you can give it any other name. And the last one, which I called it warranty value, and you're suggesting to call it guarantee value. And I think let's discuss that just because I have something to say about that. So let's backtrack and talk about the brand value. This is the value you can create before you even know that customer is interested in your services. And you could say, oh, Hector, that's just marketing. Well, that's true. It is, quote unquote, just marketing. However, it is what I call a purposeful, authoritative work, which is what you do, you know, everything that you do around setting, creating the case that you are the best person for that customer to choose to work with on a very narrow, specific specialty. Okay. So this boils down to the concept of specializing or specialization. And I think that a lot of folks think that specialization is this simple concept where it only has to do with industry niche. And if somebody tells you to go specialize or go be a specialist, that means that you should only serve a specific industry niche. And that is absolutely not true. While it's great to only serve a specific industry niche, it is not the only way to specialize. So Kirk, let me ask you, you're special. I mean, you're a specialist, aren't you?
Well, of course I'm special, Hector. I mean, everybody knows that, from my wife to my kids to, you know, anybody who's ever met me. I am very special. Some people prefer the word unique, but right. Yes, there's no one like me. I work very hard at that. But, you know, you said somebody might say it's only marketing. I think that is selling it short. Okay, it's selling it short. A brand is much bigger than marketing. It really, the term that I'd like is positioning. And it occurred to me, you've probably heard this phrase, go big or go home. I think what we would say is specialize or go home. Because if you don't specialize, by definition, you're a generalist. You're either a generalist or a specialist. And there are specialists on every street corner. And if you don't specialize, if you don't give the customer a reason to pick you over somebody else, then you're giving them no reason to pick you, and it comes down to a price conversation. That's one of the reasons why we feel like great positioning goes hand in hand with value pricing, because not only do you have a distinguishing business model that is going to set you apart, but you also have a compelling reason for the customer to choose you because of your specialization or your expertise. And yes, when you do content marketing, when you create free blog posts, podcasts, webcasts, when you speak at conferences, etc., demonstrating your expertise, you are creating value. Number one, you're creating value because you are giving some education and content away either for free or for a very low price compared to what an engagement would be. And that's fine. But you're also helping the customer realize they have a need. You're helping the customer realize that you can solve that need. Those things are also creating value. And sometimes you go as far as actually helping the customer begin to think about what the results could be on the other side. Because if your marketing talks about the results, you're helping them dream, and that creates value. So there's tons of value that's created in the brand stage. Some of it general, and some of it very specific to each customer.
Okay, so thank you for that. So we're going to change the name from brand value to positioning value. I think that was probably the perfect word I was looking for. So that first stage is called the positioning value, and we discussed specialization. The other piece about specialization is, specialization to me is not just a statement that you make. Like, you know, for you to say or make the claim that, hey, I specialize in construction, right? Whatever industry you're in, right? Whether it's accounting or IT management or web development or marketing, whatever it is, attorneys, whatever professional service you're doing, just claiming that you're a specialist on construction, let's just say that. And there's nothing wrong with simply an industry specialization, but we'll deep dive into other types of specialization. But let's assume we're simplifying it to a niche, a vertical, an industry, construction. But just saying that you're an expert in construction doesn't cut it. You kind of have to prove it in different ways. So one of the ways that the most common one is to have already construction clients. So I would say that was probably the biggest, most important one, right? So actually have construction clients, and for the world to know that you have construction clients. So if you have 2, 3, 4 great construction clients, maybe one of them has a brand, or maybe they don't have a brand, but when people see their logo or see their company name, they know, and it's obvious that they're a construction client. The low-hanging fruit opportunity would be to ask them, hey, could I tell people in my website, put your logo up there, link it to your website and say some of our great clients, you know? So just simply having that street cred where you have other clients of the same industry and letting the world know about it, that in itself, it's an important component of specialization. You have to, one way to prove it is to actually have construction clients, right? So that's a one really important one. The second one is, to me, is to create authoritative content, right? So either write blog articles about issues in the construction industry, write battle stories or war stories, right? Or of situations you had. I mean, I think they call them customer cases or use cases. So write some cases about, you know, some issues that you had with previous customers. You don't have to specifically say who the customer is. So I said you mentioned your customers in your general specialization statement, but obviously in your war stories or in your stories about use cases, you won't mention them unless they want you to. Where you talk about the issues and how you overcame those issues and the solutions that were proposed and all that stuff. So just having written authoritative content about it absolutely helps. I mean, obviously, if you can write a book, that would put you over the top. But if you're like me, where I'm not a really good writer, but I am a fairly good talker, I mean, I don't know about good, but at least I can endure a long conversation. Then for me, it's better to just create a podcast about an area that I'm passionate about or create videos about stuff that I'm passionate about. So those are the two things. One is specializing by having already the customers and letting the world know that you have the customers, and two, to actually write or create some specific content that proves that you're a specialist in the area. What else you think would be a great way to specialize or create branding value?
Well, you're right. Specialization, you can't just make a claim. You have to be able to back it up. Ideally, you're picking a vertical for your specialization. So you're not, for example, we have some colleagues and there is a need for this. So I'm not saying it's you shouldn't, but I'm just saying vertical specialization is, it's easier to stand out in a vertical than it is horizontal. So horizontal example of that would be somebody who fixes corrupt QuickBooks files. Okay. Somebody who does that, that is a horizontal specialization. It's a technical specialization within QuickBooks, which is a technology. And anytime you specialize in a technology, it's a very horizontal, meaning you're going to work with insurance customers, construction companies, attorneys, grocery stores, you know, whatever. But if we're going to go vertical, and one of the best examples I've ever seen of this happens to be a couple of accountants I know who specialize in wineries. They only serve wineries. And so you go to their websites and number one, they state up front, we are the accountant for wineries. And they talk about problems that wineries have with inventory. They talk about problems that wineries have with point of sale. They talk about how wineries can increase revenue through membership clubs. They talk about how wineries need to have a tasting room. In other words, they talk about things that are, quote, maybe not under the umbrella of accounting, but it's things they know because they've worked with enough wineries that successful wineries do this. This is a problem wineries have, and here's how you solve it. Those are the type of things that you're talking about, and it's primarily through demonstration of expertise, which is kind of the content piece, and through testimonials on your website that you back up those claims. So those would be the additional comments I would make under kind of the positioning or brand value. The second in your list is understanding value. So let's unpack that a little bit more.
So once the customer walks into your office or you start the very first meeting, the idea is that all that positioning value or brand value, it's sort of baked in the cake. So the idea is that the customer already walks in, knowing that you are an expert or you specialize on the particular problem that they have. And the reason why you have to do those two in order is because most of us have a particular budget of how much time we're willing to spend with a new prospect, right? I mean, and the prospect itself also has an attention budget of, you know, how much time they're actually going to pay attention to you talking, or not you talking, but the conversation. So there is short, limited real estate on the amount of time we can allocate to our value conversation, to our needs assessment conversation. So if we spend 20% of that time with introductions, with proving the case that you're an expert in the subject matter, with, you know, even telling war stories about situations that were similar, just trying to prove the case that you are going to be good for them so you can obviously increase that value and price accordingly and all that stuff, that's going to be time that you're taking away from the understanding element of it, which is one of the really highest value components of it is, does this service professional understand me, my needs, my goals, and my business? So understanding value is the value you create by communicating to your customer or leaving the perception to your customer that you absolutely understand what the customer wants, what their short-term goals are, what their long-term goals are, even understand some behind-the-scenes issues. And we'll dive deep into that because that's actually an interesting one. So all the explicit stuff, the stuff that was discussed, you know, obviously you need to understand what they're saying and you need to use the language that they understand and that lets them know that you understand that problem. Specialization helps not just for marketing, but it also helps to hone your skills on a particular area. And a lot of that is asking questions, digging deep into the needs, having the value conversation. We have an episode that we focus just on the value conversation and the questions to ask. So that's the understanding value. Is does a customer walk out of that meeting saying that guy gets me or that gal really, really gets me, understands my business? Because whenever you price your services or you give them a proposal, there's going to be, you know, all the tasks in the proposal, right? We're going to do this, we're going to do that. There's going to be the results, right? This is what we promise you. We're going to deliver at the end. But if the customer doesn't feel that you understood them or understand them, even if they know you're a nice person, a responsible person, and a professional, and they feel that you're going to do a great job, if you didn't understand them or understand what they wanted, everything falls apart. So that's why I think that is the most important part of it, is does this person understand me and my business?
So I really enjoy this part of the engagement with a customer because I feel like having a genuine, sincere value conversation is one of the best ways to demonstrate you care. That sounds cliche, but when I am asking questions, when I am guiding the customer through a conversation to understand why, and so many customers have not stopped to think about why. They just thought about what, and they assume because what makes sense in their mind, the why must be justified. Sometimes, in fact, many times it's not. Other times, as you and I know, sometimes they have self-diagnosed. They have not only determined what the problem is, but they've determined the solution. And you and I both know that prescription without diagnosis is malpractice. And so we can't just assume that whatever prescription they've come up with based on their self-diagnosis is correct. We need to back up and say, okay, understand that's your perception of it. And I actually would not use those words with a customer, but basically allow them to tell me what they think. But then I'm going to guide them through a conversation that allows me to go through and do my own diagnosis. That has value. You're helping the customer learn more about their situation. And if you never have another conversation with them, they should be able to hang up the phone and go, I got something out of that conversation. Ideally, you're right. You want them to hang up the phone and say, Hector gets me. Hector is the guy for me because he's worked with, you know, 20 other companies that are like me, and he understands how inventory works in my business, or he understands how, you know, we have to submit on an accrual basis, but we have to track things on a cash basis or whatever it is, right? The customer goes, he gets me, he gets my industry, and they leave not only the call going, that was a great accountant or bookkeeper, ideally they leave the call going, oh my goodness, where's this person been? So that is what you want to accomplish in this understanding value phase. And some of it leads from the branding, but there's more to it, and that's why we put so much emphasis on being so skilled at having a value conversation and learning how to get to why.
No, for sure. The value conversation and the salesmanship around the value conversation is the most valuable piece of the whole thing. I heard somebody say, his name is Philip Jones. He's an author of a book called Exactly What to Say, which, by the way, he's agreed to come in our podcast. So we're still squaring up the dates on that. But he talks about the power of language and, you know, and how the right words and stuff like that it's really what engages the conversation. But he made a statement in one of the videos that I saw that said, being a salesperson is earning the right to make a recommendation. Earning the right to make a recommendation. And how can you recommend to a stranger, right, how to spend their money on you if you don't have great positioning, great branding, and have a deep understanding of what the client needs. So I think that that statement just wraps it up so well. And okay, so let's move on to, actually, without moving on to it, let's talk about some specific hows, because I'm getting a direct message from someone here saying, well, tell us, you know, how we can ensure that we, you know, like just techniques on this understanding phase. The only one I'll say is, you want to make statements about your knowledge and capacity through questions, okay? This is my technique. You make statements of your knowledge, capacity, and experience through questions. So instead of saying, I can help you because I've done this, because I have experience, because I'm certified, what you want to do is you want to express that experience and that knowledge through questions. So one of the examples, and Kirk, we can probably go back and forth with this. One of the examples is, well, let me ask you a question. When you're actually extracting the raw materials from your inventory, do you run into a situation where maybe your warehouse people are not weighting correct? They're not weighting whatever it's on the raw material. They're consuming it, putting it in the machine to, you know, for it to become something else, and then they're not weighting it again to know the actual consumption. So instead, you're recording the estimated consumption versus the actual consumption, and then you really don't get a chance to know what your yield is. So you ask the question that makes a huge statement about what you understand about the manufacturing process, and but you didn't show off or made a statement that that's what you know. Does that make sense, Kirk?
Yep, certainly does.
Okay, so without belaboring the point, that's really what it is. Then the next one is performance value. And this is the low-hanging fruit. We don't need to spend a whole bunch of time on this, but this is the value that is derived from the work that you do. So the only thing I'll say about this, and Kirk, I'll allow you to comment on that, is whatever you promised you were going to do or didn't promise you were not going to do or you knew that was the stuff the client wanted to see from the client-facing perspective of the work, you need to do it. So that's the only thing I'll say about that. So if you are engaged to the work that is remote, right, it's very important, and you're pricing it because it's remote, because you can do it at 3 o'clock in the morning, because you can outsource it, whatever, don't promise the customer that you're going to be available from 4 to 6 to actually do the work, so the customer actually expects you to watch you do the work, that sort of thing. So remember that almost all knowledge work or service work, there's a component that's physical presence and a component that is exploiting your resources, which could be staff, knowledge, experience, and some of it the customer sees and some of it the customer doesn't see, but the customer is always going to pick what they see and what they don't see, especially if you set the expectation up front. So that's the important piece of performance value. What else do you think fits with this performance value category?
So this really fits into what I would describe as the experience. So a customer should not just engage with you, but you should do it in a way that creates an experience for them. Interacting with you should be different than interacting with any of your other colleagues. And there are several things that factor into this. A lot of it we use as part of options, but you mentioned one of them, which is what type of access do they have to you, which includes what time, what's the method, is it phone, text, whatever. You know, will you respond on nights or weekends, those kind of things. Another one is whether it's on-site or off-site. There's several things that are just in the process of executing the project that create value for the customer in the form of experience. And so I think that's what you're talking about here. Now, this is not going to be overwhelming value. In other words, this is a way you can distinguish yourself. Certain things matter to different customers. You've talked on previous episodes about actually engaging the customer about, okay, so you say you want a quick response. Well, what does quick mean to you? Is it a day? Is it 4 hours? You know, what does that mean? Because quick can mean different things for different customers. So this all kind of falls in this area of experience. So the only caveat I would issue is that experience it is most important during the project, but it will fade quickly because ultimately what matters the most is the results value.
Yes, I think the experience and the expectation is really important. And I want to piggyback on something you said. You said it's not overwhelming value. It can't be overwhelming value, not because there's something wrong with giving too much value or just too much. The thing is that I think customers have a threshold of what they detect as valuable. So there is a situation in which you're giving away too much and either the customer's not even understanding it or seeing it or perceiving it. So you may be investing a lot more resources than you have to because you're trying to like wow the customer in areas that their cognitive capacity or their attention is not designed to grasp. So a lot of times we think that certain things that we do add value, and they may for others, but not for these specific customers, which I think boils down to the understanding part. I think if you understand your client well, you don't have to guess what's valuable to them, right? So, okay, so let's move on to then results value. So that this fourth stage or fourth opportunity of creating value, the results value has to do with the actual presentation of the work product, okay? And sometimes we perform work in which we don't have to have an actual official meeting where we present what we do. You know, sometimes the work speaks for itself. That's a thing, right? Like for example, when you hire a babysitter and you come back from dinner, if your kids are sleeping, eaten, and alive, they don't have to tell you any. They could just go home and you're like, great. She or he gave me the results that I was looking for. But not everything is straightforward like that. Sometimes we'll perform work that we can tell the client is done and the client says, okay, great. And that's it. But if the client never really understood what it is that you did, then it becomes kind of an issue. It's kind of like going to surgery and the doctor saying, okay, we're going to surgery now. I'll wake you up when we're done. And then you wake up and you're like, you're done. You can go home. And they didn't say anything, you know, like it went well, or this is the recovery phase, or this is what we did, or these are the potential side effects, or this is how you take care of yourself or your wound. You know, it's one of those things that we almost expect closure, right? In the projects, we expect that closure, and that closure needs to present it somehow. So I think that results value, again, it could speak for your work, could speak for itself, but a lot of it is in the presentation. What do you think?
So I think this is probably the most important of the five stages, simply because this is the reason the customer is engaging with you. And this is something that, going back to the second stage, understanding value, this is something that you need to uncover with the customer during that conversation. And there needs to be mutual agreement before they ever sign an engagement agreement with you that this is the outcome that we're seeking. Now, it doesn't mean you're guaranteeing the outcome. The best we can do as professionals under most circumstances is guarantee objectives. And we've talked about that in other podcasts. But you don't want to normally guarantee results. That's a very advanced form of pricing, and some professionals can do it, but it's not something I generally recommend, especially if you're starting out. But you need to agree what they're shooting for is they need to do this so to help them be able to manage a 15% growth over the next 12 months, or so that they can reduce inventory turnover by 3 so that they can increase cash flows, and that increased cash flow will allow them to, or they've been invested in the business for 3 years, you know, 24/7, 365, and it's time for them to take a vacation. And so part of what you're doing is helping streamline processes and create procedures so that then they can hire an office manager so eventually they get to take some time off. I mean, you know, there's 3 different examples and you can come up with more, but you need to state what that is, and there needs to be agreement. And so if this part is vague to the customer, then I would go back and say that there was something missing in the value conversation. This should not be something that is vague. This should be the most clear of all 5 stages, because this is the why.
So it's funny, both of us said that understanding value is the most important one. And then both of us are probably going to say that the results value is the most important one. And I think the reason for that is because they're actually 2 of the same. You know, like if you understand what's valuable to your customer, and you price it because you're going to deliver that value, And then the results are exactly what you said they were going to be, or at least, you know, within the framework of what our objectives are without, you know, promising a specific number. If these two match 100%, you have a perfect engagement, and you will have a customer forever, and you will have a loyalty and recommendations, because what people, one of the things that people like the most is consistency, right? You said you were going to do this and you did exactly that. And on top of that, you gave me a price up front. That's a perfect transaction, right? You tell me exactly what you're going to do, how you're going to do it, what it's going to look like, what is it going to feel like. You actually did it, and there was no surprises on the pricing. That's a perfect commercial transaction. So that's why it feels like the understanding value and the results value are both two different stages, but that they're both the most important one, is because that's where they actually come full circle. And we only got a couple of minutes left, so let's talk about the warranty value. And you were kind of telling me that the warranty value is kind of the guarantee. And I actually want to shift a little bit away from that. I think the guarantee itself, or whatever dimension of the guarantee, should be part of the results value, just because I think that guaranteeing a result or a framework for a result or guaranteeing an objective is what put the clients most at ease when making an investment with an accountant, IT professional, consultant, advisor, whatever it happens to be. And I think that's really where the most value is. What I meant by warranty value, I meant more about the enduring effect of what you do. So for example, you know, working with a consultant this year may feel great. You know, will 2-3 years later, working with that consultant manifest itself in my work or in my life? You understand what I mean? So it's more the enduring value of working with you, way past the fact that they're done working with you. One of the things that I like to that I like to think it's a perceived value is what we call the access club. And let me tell you what I mean by that. It's, I have many customers that work with me once, just once. And you know, maybe a couple $100, we did a quick consulting work, fixed something. But then because they were a customer once, they feel that they have closer access to me. And within the next 2-3 years, they may email me once or twice with some quick questions. And because we work together and maybe I remember the case, I can easily answer those questions. Now, that is something that we typically don't really put on an engagement, because we're very careful about adding, you know, what our long tail responsibility is after the engagement is completed. But there is a perception that sort of being part of that club, it's valuable. Then the other piece is, for example, let's say you buy a BMW, right? And you're using the BMW and it's great and you're using it, but then the BMW gives you a BMW shirt, right? Or the BMW hat, as part of, you know, their loyalty strategy, to give you a little token or their appreciation. So way after you're done using your BMW, you're hanging out on the beach or something, you're wearing your BMW shirt, because you feel that you're sort of part of that club, because there's this long tail warranty effect, service quality effect that comes along with that service. And this is a little bit more philosophical, but I wanted to kind of throw it out there to see what you think. What do you think about the long tail effects of value after the job is completed?
You know, it's interesting. I kind of like the term long tail value. You know, it's interesting, being a guitar player and a musician, one of the effects that we use is called reverb. And reverb is kind of what makes audio that we're listening to sound like it's in some type of space, whether it's in a small studio room or a great big auditorium that has a lot of echo. Reverb is what creates that sense of space in music and even in voice. And we talk about the long tail of the reverb. It's kind of that trailing echo. And I love that for this stage, kind of long tail value. It really comes out of, I talked about experience earlier. Long tail value is the experience that carries on afterward. So what is it like to work with you on the next engagement? So for example, particularly with bookkeepers and accountants who work with clients on an annual basis, what is it like? What is that experience of renewing like? Is that something your customer dreads, or is it something they look forward to? Do you make that something to celebrate, or do you make it a pain in the butt? And I'm sorry, a lot of accountants and bookkeepers, it literally is a pain in the butt for your customers to go through that with you. And that's one of the reasons why I'm doing this session on, is because I think there's a lot of experience or long tail value that we're not creating, that we're just leaving lay by the wayside. And we could be creating a much better experience with our customers by focusing on the long tail. So that's how I would describe it. And I think with a value model, the idea of this long tail value is kind of implied because we're so focused on the customer experience, really toward transformation. You know, one of the people that I interviewed on The Art of Value a while back was Joe Pine, who has a book called The Experience Economy. And he goes through a lot in that book of talking about the five stages or five types of businesses you can have. You can have a service business, but you can go beyond that to an experience business or a transformation business. And value pricing really lends itself toward the experience, the transformation type of business models.
That's true. And just so you know where that tail concept comes from, there's something called tail insurance. So we have doctors have this, some CPAs get this. So we have the liability insurance, which is the insurance to protect you for the work that you're performing at the moment. And then there's the tail insurance for the long-term effect. So there's a lot of doctors that once they stop paying for the insurance because they retire, for example, you can have something that happens 5, 6, 7 years later to the patient that can be tied to something that you did, you know, 5, 7 years ago. So they get this thing called tail insurance to cover them at the tail end of that work. So, but in the accounting profession, for example, there is a perceived tail liability because you can perform a work that maybe the client gets sued 5, 6 years later, or they get an audit 4 or 5 years later and you're not working with them anymore. But there's a perceived value to knowing that they can count on you when that stuff happens. So although it's difficult to put that in a contract on how long you will be available for something like that, it is important to know that customers perceive, if they perceive you as a responsible person, a responsible company, a high value brand that is going to be there 4, 5, 6 years later, if something happens in connection with what you did, that's going to be really valuable. So I think that's a great ending point there, Kirk. Do you have any last words of wisdom here before we wrap it up?
No, I would just say I'm really excited, Hector, about the webinar you're doing. I think it's going to be fun. Again, you're doing 4 hours of content, right? So you're doing the first hour for free. You're then going to allow people to choose to buy in for the last 3 hours. So anybody should show up for the first hour just to see if you want to partake. And then if you're really interested in kind of this long tail value that we talked about, then be looking for more information about this, how to renew customers annually on a value basis, coming up from me later in the fall.
Absolutely. We'll post it in our Facebook group, facebook.com/artofadvisory. So we'll have all the links and information about that. Kirk, until next week.
See you, Hector.